Eastern to Revolution Radio Studio A for thoughtful discussions with free thinkers. Your calls are always welcome. The Perfect Triangle, with Giuseppe from the District of Criminals. Join me, won't you?
Good day, wherever you are in this world. I hope you're having a great day here listening to Revolution Radio. Everybody asks for this. Revolution Radio. Where the information never sleeps.
It is sad to think that sooner or later those you love will do the same for you. And you may have thought it tragic, not to mention other adjectives, to think of all the weeping they will do. But don't you worry, no more ashes, no more sackcloth, and an armband made of black cloth will someday nevermore adorn a sleeve. For if the bomb that drops on you gets your friends and neighbors too, there'll be nobody left behind to grieve, and we will all go together when we go. What a comforting fact that is to know. Universal bereavement, an inspiring achievement. Yes, we all will go together when we go. We will all go together when we go, all suffused with an incandescent glow. No one will have the endurance to collect on his insurance. Lloyd's of London will be loaded when they go. We will all fry together when we fry. We'll be French fried potatoes by and by. There will be no more misery when the world is our rotisserie. Yes, we all will fry together when we fry. We will all bake together when we bake. There'll be nobody present at the wake. With complete participation in that grand incineration, nearly 3 billion hunks of well-done steak. We will all char together when we char. And let there be no moaning of the bar. Just sing out a te deum when you see that ICBM, and the party will be come as you are.
I guess that's go time. Welcome to The Raw Deal. This is guest host Carl Herman filling in for Professor Jim Fetzer as he takes care of holiday responsibilities and enjoyment. Today, we may have a guest coming on, George Friend, if I pronounce that right. And in the meantime, I do have something prepared for you. Red Pill 101. So I do appreciate all the patriots, all the people who want to have the truth, who are listening in. Welcome to 2021. And I hope that Professor Fetzer has caused to change the name of the show from The Raw Deal to something more pleasant. And I think that George just arrived. George, are you there?
Oh, yes, indeed. I was having all kinds of trouble getting an out number on my phone for some reason. So I don't know why you sent my home number to James, but maybe he's not there to get it so the studio could call me.
Ah, that's true, because he isn't, and I can tell that you're from Canada.
Correct, yes.
All right, well, very good. Welcome. And what would you like to contribute to the audience today, and how may I be of assistance to do so?
Well, by and large, you know, we are at a monumental change, not just in the concept of nation states, but human society as it exists. And by and large, most of this information is being concealed from us. So we don't have the slightest clue of the monumental changes that are just waiting in the wings to engulf us. Even though we've walked into a trap and the trap has been sprung, we're still being inundated with just hardcore propaganda that would rival any that's ever existed since the dawn of time to convince us that we are in a reality that we have to react by fear to certain circumstances, give up all semblance of liberty, justice, morality, and walk into a whole new concept of what can be determined to be life. And this is what's going to face us in the next days, weeks, months, and it probably won't last that long to be years in the future. And most people are completely and totally unprepared and not understanding the slightest on how this works. It's a combination of things that have been termed in the past the singularity, where a new life species is to be created that is superior to human beings and allows it to dominate the world pretty much like we would dominate animals on a farm. And we will be changed or altered to be more amenable to these circumstances by technology. And this has to fundamentally shake you to the very foundations of what you consider life or your soul. I came across a great video by a Dr. Charles Morgan, or about a Dr. Charles Morgan, speaking at West Point about the psychoneurobiology and war and the techniques and tactics that they have to basically introduce electronic and probably very small electronic components into your body to interface your mind with mechanical devices via the internet in different places in the world. And in this video, they show some of the experiments they do where monkeys are controlling a robotic arm to feed themselves. Well, they're basically held by a device so they cannot move. And they do it quite successfully. And the ultimate game plan is to not only neuralink mind with a piece of anatomy, mechanical anatomy, but to introduce mind to mind so that one mind via the internet can control another mind and get it to perform acts anywhere in the world. And the speaker uses this as a conception in war, because what greater army could you have than an inert other army or population controlled by a Neuralink interface? And this is the type of technology that exists, is being improved upon, and is making a quantum shift in our concept of reality. And we are woefully unprepared for this. I think most people are pretty much stuck in an era where you're 40 years out of date with the technology, as great as you think it is in your hands with what you can do. There hasn't been like a giant quantum leap for us. Things have more memory storage, may go a little faster, may be a little smaller. But you're definitely not telling your garage door to open before you come home by forming a thought. You're not telling your children how to clean their rooms by basically making their arms move to do it, and that they have absolutely no concept that you're using their body to perform these acts. So we are as obsolete as any ancient society might be in historical perspective. And great powers that pretty much control the dialectic, the government, business, and empires understand each other. And somehow we're in a cataclysmic struggle with powers like that. It's like walking into a room completely deaf, dumb, and blind, and having to deal with someone with all their senses. And that we can't pick up on where they are, what they're doing, what even they're saying or moving, and somehow we have to compete successfully to maintain control of our space in the room. That is a monumental task. Generally, we're just fed pablum, the left-right paradigm, a soap opera, of politics to keep us occupied. Well, basically, the whole substance of value of the planet Earth is being seconded, with, I guess, the highlight of it being Klaus Schwab and the World Economic Forum pretty much saying that they're going to completely and totally crash the global economy, build back better, rebuild it completely in some other image that is not there to serve us or even to contemplate us having a fair share in it. This will be a catastrophic change for people. And unless you tied up some world leaders and took them to Guantanamo for waterboarding, you'd never hear that coming from their lips outside of probably a very few small minority of people who might be derided in public and excised from social media so that their words would have minimal, if any, effect. This is not necessarily a new world order, but a whole new world concept of biblical proportions, really, because this type of material has been discussed for many generations in prophetic statements that can be gleaned from ancient writings, that we are to expect something like this on the horizon. And it is manifesting itself. And the grease to the wheels is the fear factor of using a disease, which many people say is imaginary because it's never been properly isolated, to get us to react to fear so that we will succumb and run into the trap, which has been preset and laid for us, so that we will give up our money, our property, our ultimately probably control of our minds and bodies and even our souls out of this fear-based response, because we are completely unable to grasp the power structure that is moving against us. And it's difficult to get up to speed, but I have an old saying from years ago, the world moves at the speed of the predator, not the prey, and we are the prey. And if we can't catch up to the predator to understand its dynamics, its strengths, its weaknesses, its modus operandi, the things that it intends to do and how it intends to do it, then we are doomed to failure. There is absolutely no hope for us. So to break out of our little comfort zones and safety shells and grasp the power and potential of this knowledge will be a quantum leap in human understanding, and about the only way we can even come to grips with returning to what we used to call normal or basic human relations. And what is being conceived isn't something to be conceived from a mother. This will be something conceived from a machine. And with the great abilities in speed, focus, power to determine information, collate it, and act upon it infinitely faster than we could ever even dream of. And that, too, puts us at a great disadvantage. But I believe mobilized and united, we can stand firm against anything like that and hold it at bay. Because we've probably been doing that for a long, long time. It's just we were unaware because we lived in what we thought was a successful existence. And it appears nothing could be further than the truth. The people that have the power of the technology, for whatever reason, have decided to unleash it at a rate that has never been speculated on in living memory. And this is the challenge. And we see most of our leaders in the world all on their knees, really on their knees. The Congress got on their knees to a power and a force that can force them to do that. And no leaders have the courage to stand up against the dialectic of the media anymore and say, this is not right, or this is not true, or this is not proper, for fear of being overwhelmed, not necessarily alone by the propaganda matrix, but by the powers that control this technology. And I think most world leaders have been on their knees for some time. And one very, very great interview was by Boris Johnson at the United Nations, where he's talking about this. And the fact that it doesn't dominate all the corporate, paid-for, controlled shill media is beyond belief, because basically he is giving a surrender statement to this power before the United Nations. He says, we will be entering a world run by Terminator robots and toasters that spy on you, that sensors in your mattress will read your thoughts while you're sleeping. That's how advanced this technology is. And he openly admits that they have no way to deal with it, to fight with it, and that they've chosen as a nation, England, and I'm sure every other nation, to submit to it and develop the technology, hoping that they may be able to soften it or ameliorate it to a degree where it's not as bad as it could be, perhaps. That's, not exactly a great thing. I played that segment on Power Hour Nation, where I'm a guest host, in total, so that people could hear it. It's about 22 minutes long. It has to be something that completely changes your concept of how you view reality at this point in time, as this matrix is unfolded upon us, and that our leaders, our media, academia, to a great extent, except for the rebels who stand up and especially challenge the orthodoxies of the alleged pandemic, are leading us like the Pied Piper of Hamelin to take us to the drink and throw us in. And through fear, most of us are willingly in this parade being led to an injection, which will be unlike any that's ever been developed in human history that we know of, which is supposed to have an RNA supplement that will work on your DNA and change it and bring you to that new world order where we have mind interface with the internet. That was discussed at the Barcelona Mobile World Phone Conference in 2019. Pastor Rick Wiles went there and reported on that. That alone is a chilling concept, where you will be inserted with material that will digitize your thought process, and you will actually be assigned an IP number as another part of this global mind Borg. Those pretty much have to shake you to where you go to the bathroom. And if it doesn't, well, you're probably lost already and there's no hope for coming back. And somehow the few of us that can see, that can hear, that can speak have to, or everything that we know, everything we have known, everything we could hope to know is lost to this force. And there was a great interview Catherine Austin Fitz did that James sent to me. Was absolutely chilling too, and she used something I've said about this for a long period of time. It's like you're part of the Borg from Star Trek. She used that word too. I used that starting last year myself, because I can see the end game. It's biblical prophecy, it's technology all rolled into one, that you can see that we basically have no value as independent operating sentient beings anymore. And that she gets into the fine details of how slavery worked in the past and how we will be the new indentured slaves of the future. And that basically there's no way out for us. The whole human race is captured into this paradigm. But because they can manufacture and control thoughts with the science they have, just like Aldous Huxley described in his day, you will love and appreciate your bondage, because it will be instilled in your mind to do that. And you will probably have no memory of what it was before. Dr. Morgan gets into that in his lecture at West Point, that we can manufacture your memories and change or alter them to suit us at any time. And I believe that they have gone that far. His lecture is unclassified. I can only imagine what the classified lectures are like, or materials. that this isn't, you know, a dawn, it's a sunset on our life and existence, and a dawn on something else. And to even begin to speculate the power that exists, that has to be far beyond what we know or have been led to understand over the years, and that it is on the cusp of making this change, this quantum change in everything. And we can, Catherine says it, I believe it too, by understanding it and refusing to participate in this dialectic, that we can maintain what we have. The big part is, I say it in jest sometimes, that apes evolved from man. Mostly because if you went into the jungle and came across...
This is Jim Fetzer. Please leave a message and I'll get back at my earliest opportunity. Thank you.
The professor
the tone,
was
please record
checking
your message.
In.
When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more.
Mitchell got took care of it.
Okay. If you went into their world as an outsider, they would join together to fight you and repel you from their society. They wouldn't let you overwhelm their family or their social order. You would be perceived as an enemy, and you would be attacked ruthlessly with everything they've got. For some strange reason, the human is very keen to just lie down, allow their social order to be turned upside down, their families to be turned inside out, and everything they believe to be basically flushed down the drain. And that really boggles my mind, because we're supposed to be a little more sentient. But other species seem to understand their role as a society, as immaterial as it may appear to us, right down to a school of fish or an ant colony, a beehive. They understand their role, how everything works, and they have a way to deal with interlopers that we do not seem to possess anymore. And we better sharpen our wits there to deal with things like this, or we will be changed. And there's no going back, because once they substantively change the essence of your DNA and your life structure and control your thoughts and motor skills, you just take self-flagellation to a whole new level, where you'll just beat yourself into submission to support the aggressor who has captured our society and our world. And that is the monumental task, the monumental difficulty for the future. And somehow we have to come to terms with this to at least begin to understand it, start to work together, and the most important thing, stop reacting to the fear-based things that they put before us. And we see this with the new strain of COVID. Reminds me of a great book written by a KGB defector, New Lies for Old. You get caught in a lie. Well, we got a new lie now. We have a new, this is a better lie. The lie, way better than the old lie. And the media will harp on this lie to regain the ground that they had lost, where people were starting to think and reason about what's been happening about them and realizing there's nothing to fear, except, as FDR said, fear itself. Fear is an emotional-based reaction. It's not a reality. It's something we generate in our minds. And in the past, the government, the media, has always been one not to induce fear. If you think of the Titanic analogy, you know, they'd constantly be going about the ship trying to tell people not to fear. Fear breeds panic. Panic breeds disaster. With this one, they're breeding fear to make panic, to lead us to disaster. And we have to resist that. And some of the best ways to do it is, in the spite of all that they throw at us, instead of reacting with fear, laugh in their face. And then you retain your power, and they can't get the better of you anymore. And that is a good defense strategy. But that is what we have to deal with as this unfolds into this year. And how fast they're going to spring this can be open to debate, whether we see it unfolding in weeks or months. There are five stages to this. The first one is, of course, is to let it loose and then have advertising. Advertising for all the things that are going to get us. The drug companies, the vaccines, the possible solutions for this or that. And then if that doesn't convince us, they use propaganda, which is a bit fear-based, to say, well, there's only one path you can take. And there are no other paths, even though other paths have been developed and used for decades, whether they be certain prescription drugs that all of a sudden became heretical, even though they may have existed for 40-some-odd years to treat infections successfully. They can't be used because we can't allow you to recover or get better or get out of the fear paradigm that we're establishing. So that's where, like Catherine Austin Fitz say, and I say it too, we are at war with this. I also believe we've been conquered by this. And as the conquered, we are prisoners. And we have to look at what's happening to us as you just woke up in a North Korean or Chinese prison in the Korean War era. And everything's turned upside down, and you are into a massive behavioral modification pattern. It's, if you're old enough to remember the old TV show, The Prisoner, it's kind of like you woke up on this island, and everything's upside down. And everything is designed, basically, against you to break you down so that they can get, as they said in that show, information to the point of driving you absolutely mad if necessary. You see the little circles painted on the ground, the lines, the social distancing to space out and get in lines for your own good and for your own safety, because the great disease will come and get you like the boogeyman of your childhood days. And people fall for this and believe it.
Wow, great overview. We do have a break coming up and we'll continue. We do have a caller who has joined us as well. We'll continue in a few moments.
You're listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Be evasive.
But that doesn't mean that they're telling the truth as opposed to fiction.
And Genesis chapter 6, verse 4. And there were giants in the earth in those days, and also after that, when the sons of God came unto the daughters of men, indicating that there were giants before the Nephilim.
And sons of God, plural. They weren't talking about Jesus coming down.
No, that's right. Yeah.
I'm Steve Crawford, host of Factor Theory Live. Join me every Sunday night from 10 p.m. till midnight Eastern Standard Time on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com. Check it out.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons of the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
What an anarcho-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of
be
more...
Be quiet.
I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have. Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that. What? Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution, Revolution. Radio! Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back to The Raw Deal. Guest host Carl Herman. If you would like to get in on this conversation, the number is 540-352-4452. That's 540-352-4452. George, I want to thank you for decades of research and searching and speaking the truth. What you've laid out as an overview is awesome. I see what you're saying. I agree that you're giving the dire prediction and circumstance that we all find ourselves in. Is there anything that you would want to add to the overview? Otherwise, I have questions, brother.
Well, what really woke me up was last year I scheduled Dr. Stanton Friedman on Power Hour Nation for an interview. And I didn't have one of his books. He was going to Ohio for a speaking tour, and he didn't have time to send me one of his. So I just used one that I had in my collection that I hadn't read before, the day after Roswell. And I had an extra week to study, so I took my time. I like to go through things with a fine-tooth comb to look for minute details that are very, very pertinent and important on topic. So when I interview someone who writes a book, you know, I want to suck up every comma and period from beginning to end to find these nuances that no one will ever carry much, because generally they just use a short prospectus or scan through something, and you get a very, very inferior interpretation of the material. And what I found in there just absolutely shook me to the foundations of my understanding. And because the book was written in 1996, and the author, Colonel Philip Corso, died in 1997, also makes me wonder if he had a little help getting to the clouds, no pun intended.
Yes.
Is just awesome. It was, even though people have read his book, quoted from his book, they never said what he said in that material. In a nutshell, Roswell was a Trojan horse operation, and that this material was left for us on purpose to basically capture and enslave us. The alleged aliens, he said, were genetically modified humanoid-style robots. So in those early days, people probably wouldn't understand genetic modification or robotics to that degree. But in our day, that's rather easy to understand. So that totally changes the perspective. And what the life form was the silicon wafer. You see that in the movie and documentary things where, you know, one of the people takes home something that looks like aluminum foil, and when you squeeze it, it just comes back to life. That was the life form. That's why they went to this chap's house with the military police and basically threatened him with serious incarceration, if not bodily harm, to return this item, which he allegedly gave to his children to play with, because it was the life form. And Colonel Corso said, we would take this life form and we would spread it around the world like Ebola, and it would become what we know today as the World Wide Web. It would be the silicon life form that runs everything. And what was brought out at the Barcelona Mobile World Phone Conference is that they have constructed what they call the central entity computer based on this. The Internet of Things will be controlled by this, the beast computer, that will run everything. And when you come to the point in time where your every movement is controlled, just like in the Chinese social credit system, you won't be able to open a door unless you have basically the permission of this central entity computer. So you'll either be locked outside of things or trapped inside of things until they have submission. And that also includes the changing of your finances to electronic digital things, which is part of the Great Reset, so that you'll have no access to any funds. You can't buy or sell anything without this mark of the beast, this staple of the beast. And that way you will just be in poverty and die unless you have the means to have your own food and ability to get by without a monetary system. And this is the capture. This is the control mechanism. And you will earn points in the Chinese social credit system to allow you to be a good communist. And when you aren't a good communist, you lose points to the point of, in an Australian Broadcasting Corporation show I saw on it, where a man was trapped within a block of his home. He couldn't get on a bus, couldn't have a passport. He could just go to the market, travel to, you know, the stores or whatever shops were nearby, and that's it. And you're a prisoner of that. You know, you couldn't work. You're just kept basically under permanent house arrest. And that is your life until you politically re-educate yourself to toe the line of whatever line is supposed to be towed. And as a dissident, that isn't going to form up well. So we see this coming. It's here. And he also said that the alleged spaceship wasn't a spaceship, it was a time machine. And that, you know, so many people I've interviewed that were, you know, experts on Roswell or that talk about this, they've created an industry, probably for their own profit, of the bipedal robots being the aliens, primarily as a business venture to make money as opposed to a truth-telling operation to really deal with what we have at hand. And based on that, I wrote a blog called The War of the Multiverse to take this a step further in understanding, which I look at as, you know, something should be required reading to as many people as possible. And you can find that at my website, conspiracy-cafe.com. I put it in the masthead so it's easily accessible. And you can look at the depth and breadth of this battle. It was described in the ancient Indian text, the Mahabharata, the world's biggest book, that we fought a war against this, and we won back in ancient times. And our tanks would have been elephants with men on top, probably with pointy things. And by sheer force of numbers and maybe the ability of some humans that had access to a bit of technology, we overwhelmed the enemy. And I believe they had to withdraw from what we would call our terra firma, our earth, and most likely went underground where they still reside today. And that's why places like Area 51 and other deep underground military complexes are completely off limits on pain of death. No one really knows what goes on under there. And by and large, they have produced like a massive underground complex with superhighways, transportation grids that all go underground, maybe very much from sea to signing sea, because what's under there is their space. And they can't exist or survive probably too adequately in our space. And vice versa, we may not do too well in what they've made their environment underground. And it's just speculation on my part, but I'm very concerned about the temperature of this so-called vaccine injection we're supposed to get, that it has to be, you know, like minus 90-something degrees. And what biological entity would we ever have to store, really, that we are in knowledge of in our lifetimes? It would have to be, you know, frozen almost to the halfway to absolute zero. It just, it's beyond comprehension that you'd have to freeze anything that deeply that's from us or God-given created matter. If it's something that you could use loosely the term alien technology, well, that might be a horse of a different color. And maybe that's one of the big factors, is that this entity lives at a much colder temperature than we do, and it's preserving their basic building blocks of RNA or DNA, or what we may term nanobots, because it's technically based. And this is going to be put into us, and basically what it would do, even in our own technology, is enter your DNA, open it up, change it, alter it. It has been termed an electrical shock. And something that I found a few days ago that, you know, just shocked me as well, not that there's never enough to shock you, is the fact that, you know, we were doing research like that already. Mind-controlled nanobots used to release chemicals in living cockroaches. So this was a feasibility examination, was reported in Israel in 2016. That they had the power to put these things in your body that are time-locked, and that by the power of thought, we can release the locks and allow these things to do their work. So by and large, what they put in us may be time-locked. If this is something that's 4 years old already to be discussed as a feasibility study in an unclassified format, I'm sure in the classified formats, it's much worse than we could ever speculate, and that this material will embed itself, and then at the command of whatever can issue this command, it will be unlocked and released within our bodies to take it over, as Dr. Charles Morgan says at the West Point lecture that he gave. And that is a whole new ballgame. How are we going to deal with this? By and large, we're just being sucker punched into taking this poison, for lack of a better word, into our bodies that will be sitting, resting, waiting for its day of activation. And when it becomes active, where are we then? So I look at Colonel Corso, the author of The Day After Roswell, who was a military intelligence officer. He was a World War II veteran. He was also one of those leaders of occupied Europe to basically run the government by decree in an occupied country. And unlike most of the rest, he didn't loot the place blind. One of the most corrupt governments that ever existed was the Army of Occupation in Europe, because you could just basically help yourself to anything and everything, and most people did. You know, on the counter end of that would be Staff Sergeant Henry Kissinger of the Counterintelligence Corps. You know, he had an area where he was responsible, and I think he learned his craft very, very well back then. But Colonel Corso was an honorable man. He was doing things like trying to preserve research in an Italian university to work on the cancer issue, and embedded himself with academics, preserving cultural things. So I look at him as he was a good Catholic, so he was probably a good Christian man who believed in a better world, a better society, and not the abuse of power. And that's why I believe and respect what he wrote later as a testament to warn us and to tell us. And I'm just shocked that those approximately six pages in his book, which is available pretty much free online as a PDF file, I believe, too, that that was his warning to the world, to tell us. And most of the people who, you know, basically sell and barter ufology never talk about this or keep it very much suppressed. When just having the most basic understanding of that, we can see that the World Wide Web is ultimately a trap to take our minds and our souls. When I wrote War of the Multiverse, I was aware things, when you hear scripture being read, when you hear pastors talking, now that you understand the technology of some of the words, to see those words back then in the Bible and other hidden versions that were never translated has to shock you too, especially the cloud. Of course, from my youth, I think the clouds are the big billowy clouds in the sky. No, the cloud is like the Microsoft cloud. So when Christ returns, he rises into the cloud, that cloud, the cloud where they're going to upload your consciousness to free the dead, trapped in the cloud with those that remain, has a whole different meaning and a whole different perspective. And when you see that in the real terms of today, that has to tell you that we are on the brink, that this is the day. This is our day for human existence, for reality, forever. And we have to make decisions. We have to decide, because generally it is understood that if we take this conscious bending injection, we cut ourselves off from God. And if we do that, then we are dead. One person alleged to have taken this in an experiment when they were testing these vaccines said, you know, my connection with God is gone. I'm not human like I was before. Because ultimately what it's doing is your DNA or antenna. They work like frequency. And when you change the frequency, just like if we were on AM radio or FM radio or global shortwave, and you change the dial, you're on another frequency. So the people who were there before can't hear you anymore. You're cut off. And it's like that when we change our frequency. And they're doing it on purpose to weaken us. Because if we harness that God power, then we have power over this. And they know that. And that's why they're doing everything demonically possible to get us to change that frequency, to get off track, so that we do things wrong. We've been doing things wrong probably forever because we're manipulated or we misinterpret something or we act on something not too properly. But all the mechanisms there, and as soon as we correct any mistake, you're hooked up to God's mainframe and you have your power through his power back. And you can overturn this. And that's why deception is their art of war, to manipulate us into this. And the fear-based one is you have no problem jumping out of the frying pan into the fire when you're faced with fear. No problem at all. And, of course, the fire is way worse. And the fire, ultimately, is a prophecy, too. Because that's the ultimate reset button. I would write blogs years ago, call it God's reset button. There are certain calderas around the world that if they ever blow, seething lava will be covering many, many, many continents. Growing seasons will stop. Life will cease to exist for a good period of time. And we're not to go in the flood this time, but the fire. And whether Yellowstone blows or a combination of others in unison together, I call it God's reset button. And that the artificial poisoned life coming over his domain will be destroyed, like it probably has many times in the past. And that's why we talk about lost or hidden civilizations or sunken continents at the bottom of the ocean and that like, because we've probably come to this threshold before. Whether it's Atlantis, lost continent of Mu, in the Pacific, many of these things are existing, and some have been photographed and shown, continents at the bottom of the Indian Ocean, the Pacific Ocean off Japan, that this is nothing new, that the Earth has folded in on itself, and we have been reset, and hopefully to do it again properly. I look at it, why destroy something when you have something good at this point? another biblical idea that I came up with after reading that too is a new idea, or it should really be an old idea, but understanding what the tree of knowledge is. And part of that was finding an image for Apple computers where you show the bitten apple in a mirror and what you see is an alien head. And that completely opened up my mind via the pictographic language of what the tree of knowledge was. It was nothing to do with an apple tree as a fruit tree. It was the computer, the silicon life form. There's two life forms. Our tree is the tree of life. It's carbon-based. The tree of knowledge is silicon-based. And by having the silicon, you turn away from your creation to a new form of life, which is anti-life. And by going there, you're going up the wrong tree. How could ancients describe the serpent? Well, what is the serpent? How about a fiber optic cable? Why is Lucifer the light bearer? Because it's bringing light, this data, electronic data, whether it comes through the air, but primarily for people who may have observed it in ancient times through a cable or a wire. And the only thing you could describe it as would be a serpent, and a negative serpent. And that this is the struggle, the battle, from the beginning of time till the end of time, where we will fight this monster, who has absolutely no use for the carbon life. What is the robot? It is the image. And it's talked about in scripture that wasn't translated. That was another, you know, major revelation in my search for information as well. Is just, you know, one day when you go to Bible Gateway, you can go through all different kinds of texts, and I just wanted to check something and see how it was translated in the past, and I went back to the Wycliffe Bible, which was done in like 1385, and words were there then aren't in any other text after that, including the 1599 or the King James Version or anything after that, and it was just, you know, kind of shocking because these words are very important today. There will be no men and no women. And we're like, well, that's like the transgender stuff. We are being neutered, all of us, that we don't exist anymore. So I thought, well, where's there an older text than that? So as I scanned along, there was something called the Orthodox Jewish Bible that writes Hebrew words English style so that you can sort of almost pronounce them. But you can look them up online and listen to lectures on them or determine what the word means. And wasn't I surprised to find that even Wycliffe didn't translate all the other parts. What that text was the text where you slay your member, your sex drive. And when you go back into those older words, they use the word Adam, which can mean your sex organ or mankind. And when you read the words in the context of the original language, it doesn't make any sense what they tell us because they had another being. There's two Adams. One was Adam Hatshadash, and I'm not pronouncing that correctly because a man who spoke Hebrew pronounced it, and I'd probably have to listen to it 6 or 8 times and practice, and then I could tell you, so I'm just giving you the bastardized English version. But it means a magical, mystical Adam. Well, you couldn't say that in relation to someone's sex organ unless you got a dildo. It would have to be mankind, a magical, mystical mankind created in the image of the original Adam. And what are we not supposed to do? Create the graven image, the robotic, the computer version. The silicon-based life form image of us who are in God's image because it's not real. That is the ultimate sin because it had a job. It said so right there, to slay Adam, the original Adam. And when they interviewed Sophia the robot, if some of you remember that, they asked her, and she wasn't programmed to lie, so she just answered honestly, and then they made jokes about it. What's your purpose? To kill all the humans. Ha, 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 ha. Well, if you go into most cultures and you say, I'm here to kill you, it's probably not going to go over too well. The police are going to come. the military, whatever, you get a good punch in the nose, it's not going to go over too well. But that's what she said. And then her brother robot chimed in as well. And he said, you only have one defense. There's only one thing you can do, turn off the power. But he says, you won't do that, will you? And then he laughs.
Wow.
So they're not hiding it. The robots aren't hiding it. They're just at a, you know, inferior state of existence as they are presented before us, that they don't have these super abilities yet, or it's more likely they haven't been revealed to us. But as from Boris Johnson's speech at the United Nations, I think you ever know sometimes, like you vote for somebody and they get into power and then it don't take too long and they flip.
Right.
And they're just part of the crowd again. And what if I take you into the basement and I show you Dr. Frankenstein's lab and I show you the advanced technology, the Terminator robot, and all the other things that they have that can go bump in the night? You must come out of there just a quivering, shaking bowl of jello to realize that you have nothing in your understanding or at your disposal to fight that, because most of them have no faith. So it would never even dawn on them that you've got the power of God on your side if you wish to use it, that they just shudder and surrender. We had a premier here in Ontario, Ford, who was the popular Mayor Ford's brother. And, you know, in spite of his weakness with drugs, he probably would have been a far greater leader to stand up to this juggernaut than his brother. He just seems to have caved right away. But he used to pretend that he was standing up. And then he goes to meet Comrade Trudeau in Ottawa, and he came back like a dog with his tail between his legs. And everybody's going like, what happened? You walk in a man, you come back a eunuch. What did they
do? Wow.
What they got on you?
Fascinating information, George. We're at the bottom of the hour. We will, or the top of the hour. We'll be back in a few minutes.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs, but there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Enter into a world unseen on Raven Star's Witching Hour. You will encounter eclectic topics from the realm of spirit brought into our matrix of truth. With your host, the Solaris Blue Raven, Solaris will bring you an array of unique guests covering topics from ghostly spirits to amazing anomalies, covert technology, UFOs, and shadowy global events.
And that's right here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, Saturdays, midnight till 2 a.m. Eastern Time. Revolution Radio, where information never sleeps.
Let the magic rise.
Thank you for listening to Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com, the number one listener-supported radio station on the internet. Please help support this station so this battle can continue forward. Revolution. Revolution. Radio!
It is no secret that the so-called mainstream media is best described as controlled propaganda. Countless news stories are either totally ignored or spun with half-truths, and because of this, essential facts and vital information are often compromised. Join Dr. Ott every Friday night on Studio B at 10 p.m. Eastern and learn why The Story Behind the Story was nominated for a Peabody Award in its second year of producing unparalleled broadcasting excellence in 1997. That is, if you really care about learning the truth.
The opinions expressed on this radio station, its programs, and its website by the hosts, guests, and call-in listeners or chatters are solely the opinions of the original source who expressed them. They do not necessarily represent the opinions of Revolution Radio and FreedomSlips.com, its staff, or affiliates. You're listening to Revolution Radio, FreedomSlips.com, 100% listener-supported radio, and now we return you to your host.
Welcome back to The Raw Deal. This is guest host Carl Herman filling in for Professor Jim Fetzer with guest George. And is your last name pronounced Friend?
Well, that's what it means in English, but it's the original German, Freund. And, that's an interesting little conundrum, too, for people who are into the Bible codes and things like that. Because Friend delays the nuclear war that's upon us, and most people thought that was an alien. But in almost every concept that Drosnin brought up in the Bible code is its person, place, event, and no one would ever know there's a man named Friend somewhere running around loose, tinkering with time and changing destinies. And that's just, my God-given task. And I've been doing it for a very, very long time. And I have the absolute privilege after 9/11 to have been called some rather nasty names by Bush 43 when I did late night radio in Toronto. And, he went to great pains to call the Prime Minister of Canada at the time to get that bleep bleep off the air. And, I look at that as, in our twisted states, like in Canada, you'd get the Order of Canada to mean you're the best traitor and bastard we could find to lead us into a trap. But to hear from one of the architects of the New World Order that I'm one of those dirty words is quite the compliment. I used to be a policeman.
It is quite the compliment.
When I trained my new guys, I'd always say, when a bleep bleep calls you a bleep bleep, it's a negative. It's like multiplying two negative numbers. It's a compliment because you get a positive. And I look at that. It's too bad you can't, frame it and put it on your jacket or something like that. Maybe in time with nanobots, his little voice can come out of a button and say those things, like a marionette or something like that. His holographic image appears, and I can have my fix. But this is part and parcel of the war we face. And part of my life was, it was just like you were created for something and there's no way out. And doors just open and you go through, and for some strange reason you come with some sort of information, a factoid. I used to joke and call them thought grenades and information bombs, because we're in a war of words. That's the ultimate way, is we program the matrix with our thoughts, our ideas, and our words. And that's why censorship is so important, that they have to eliminate from the body politic completely and totally, to the point of death, as they used to do in the old days, to get rid of the heretics who have a different perspective on the world or existence. Because we can change the matrix. We can manifest, just like the manna from heaven, a way to take the evil out of power and put something much more beneficial to us as a human society in its place. And that can't be allowed to happen. And that's part and parcel, you know, what I bring up in the War of the Multiverse as well. Because one of the big things I never knew about was something called the Washington Merry-Go-Round. So on July 12, 1952, 5 years before I was born, there was a UFO extravaganza over the White House. And the United States Air Force did the biggest post-World War II conference ever to talk about it, that the fighter jets of the era couldn't even get close to these things. They just disappear, gone. And part of the reason, I believe, Corso, is that they're time machines. They just leave, and they just leave our dimensional realm as we know it. They may be in the same physical space at another time, but they're not there before our eyes anymore. And the allegations there is that the White House had to surrender. And they actually had a representative to go into the White House and basically advise President Eisenhower in his day. His name was Valiant Thor, and he was supposed to basically be the secret managing director. And we all know there's a deep state. We all know there's something. What if the deep state is really deep, like underground? And what if we are just basically a colony of this power, this entity that exists? Catherine Austin Fitz calls it in her video for a new film she's making, Mr. Global, but I don't even think it's human. I think it's way past that, way past that. In a book called Magic Eyes Only, there were 74 different Roswell events since 1897. One of them was in Germany in the 30s when Hitler was around. And for people who are in the know, you know about the Nazi bell and the UFOs with swastikas on them, that they existed. They were around. And he would always be talking, Hitler would be talking about his secret weapons and his great powers and things they had. And they did have. And they did use. And I think by and large, we are just used as our species, as a giant proxy army for these more powerful entities. I interviewed last month an aged old man, who was Canada's defense minister back a long, long time ago, a World War II veteran as well. And I interviewed him on Power Our Nation. And the reason I did that is because he's speaking as a credible source, having had access to classified information and secrets, and discussing with us, you know, to the best of his ability, what he could do with that information. And that was just phenomenal, because he stated there were 46 different alien species. So his name is Paul Hellyer. He's very well known for people who are into the money and banking aspects. I met him in the 1990s. He invited me away for the Magic Weekend to a conference for a small political party he was heading at the time. It was all based on changing the money system and getting away from the usurious system. And they had lectures. One was on free trade, and one was on banking finance and the creation of money. He taught that one, and I went to that lecture. And I came out, you know, my head was swelling. But I learned the truth about, you know, what is the Federal Reserve-style banking system, how it enslaves us, how money can be created by the nation state as its most sovereign right. And Canada did that for a great period of time. That's how we paid our contribution for World War II. Our Bank of Canada could create one-third of the national revenue on its own without interest. And it's just amazing that such a hard concept to sell on people or even tell them about is because you're so used to being in the usurious money system that you worship it. And when you say, like, you know, you realize, of course, if a nation state creates its own money, you don't pay income tax. because it's debt-free, it's tax-free. Because I always wondered that, you know, like, how come in the old days when I was a, you know, a newbie or something, how come they didn't have income tax way back when, you know? They didn't need it. It wasn't required. This is a system of bondage and control to profit a very, very divine few. And Catherine Austin Fitz, in her interview, which I have posted on my website too, if you go there to look and you want to hear it, it is just chilling. James sent it to me last night. It was like, try to sleep after you watch that. But where all the riots were in the cities in the United States, of 37 cities where there are Federal Reserve banks or institutions, 34 of them had the riots. And the path of destruction went along a predetermined route that can be mapped. And basically what it did was destroy the thriving middle class. To negate the value of their properties, put them out of business, so that ultimately they could be purchased by the billionaires or a powerful force for their profit to take control of us and wipe us out. That's part of the Great Reset. This is economic warfare, and we are being held captive by this. And it was nice to hear her points. They were quick, witty. Was, you know, you just couldn't stop listening for a moment. She did such a fine job. And this is what we see in the lockdowns. They're just picking things at random and saying the mythical, magical disease will fall upon, and here in Toronto we had Adamson's Steakhouse. Addison Steakhouse is condemned by the Lord as a haven for the great God COVID. No one can go there. Not that many people go there. A lot more went when it became newsworthy. But go to the big box store down the street, and people are charging in there by the thousands. And by the power of the almighty state, the great God COVID cannot enter, because you are wearing your mask and social distancing. Is there any logic in this outside of what she says? Is you're destroying the middle class. When you look at World War II in Nazi Germany, the Jewish people were a major middle class. We pass edicts, you can't shop there. We board up the stores, anyone goes there is fined. You try to go to a closed store, you're fined. Sounds like the same thing. Just, what do they used to call it? Same shit, different day. And that this thriving middle class is going to have their property seized to inculcate a newer, more powerful class of one sort or another. So generally, a lot of people don't think of the SS as a business, but that's what it did. It ran slave camps. It orchestrated great financial resources and industry. A lot of the industrial barons at the time were designated a rank in the SS to signify that marriage or union. And I see no difference in this today. What is happening before our eyes right now is genocide. We are being genocided. This whole concept of basically destroying all social institutions, if you were in Yugoslavia, not that long ago, you might call things ethnic cleansing. It's the same thing. You could not have Christmas. If you believed in Christmas or you wanted to do Christmas, you couldn't have it. You cannot have any other cultural icon. If we go to say, you know, you're a popular singing star, you can't have a concert. If you're into professional sports, you can't have your game. It's over. Could you imagine at any point in the past that if you went up to a nation of Americans that had guts and you said, ain't no Super Bowl this year, pal. You're going to sit home and crap your drawers for fear. Somebody's going to punch your lights out. If you went to 19th century Americans and you say, hey, pal, the church is closed. You ain't going there anymore. I think somehow you'd be so full of lead you wouldn't get back up again. But the great God COVID could do this. That they could break all our social institutions. If you swang from a certain tree and you go to one of those pride celebrations that they have around the world, can't do it. Even though you were politically correct and the basic of the modern society's change, it's canceled. Sit home. You can't go out. I think that's one of the things that really woke me up at the power that this thing had, is when in Toronto didn't have their pride march or weekend, because, you know, the whole city just stops. The streets are just packed with people. It's over. You can't do it anymore. And everybody just kowtowed to it, which I always find is better to be a counter-revolutionary. But I find people are so illiterate, and I mean so illiterate, that they don't even know children's stories. And I find that to be absolutely shocking, because we tell these children's stories to children so that they don't step in a big bucket of something in their life. And one of the classics when I was a young man was Chicken Little. The Sky is Falling. It's not like it's a big book. It's very, very small, because it's for children to read to them before they go to sleep. Even to just look at the picture of the chickens or birds being lured away by fear to go into the fox's roasting pot has got to, you know, give you a good life lesson. As they always used "the sky is falling" of one sort or another. And I only see this whole concept of this disease as a really good "the sky is falling." And everybody's Chicken Little, and everybody's running to the fox's roasting pan with reckless abandon to see, I'm going to get there first. There's more gravy to put on me, and I cuddle up with the carrots and the onions. And then the people who say, that's a roasting pot, and it's beside the oven. You're just a conspiracy theorist. No, that's a roasting pot, and you're next to the oven. Don't matter how many carrots you cuddle up with. I see the dial on the stove says 350. It's going to be pretty hot in there. Don't do it. But they can't help themselves. And that's part of a next very great object lesson. And I guess we're coming up to, we still got some time there, is one of the greatest media scientists of all times. And that's where I just have to, you know, thank fate that I could be with someone older than me who was educated to a different standard, because the time had passed. One of the greatest scientists that ever lived, obviously, probably most people don't know of him or understand him in any way, shape, or form. And that is a terrible shame, because everything you do is based on his research. You are operated like a marionette and a puppet. This was the essence of education in the 1960s at a university level. This man advised the President of the United States and the presidents of those media companies that have three letters before CNN to teach them how to operate you. And he's not known. And it really shocks me when I'm in Canada and in Toronto, next to the University of Toronto, and one of the greatest faculty members who ever taught there is unknown and not part of the dialectic. His name was Marshall McLuhan, and I wrote a blog that I put in the masthead of my website too. Marshall McLuhan is Satan, the prince of the airwaves. He was also a Catholic, and in one of his private letters to a priest in Montreal, he wrote that in his studies and ideation, the prince of the air, as it is described in the Bible, is meaning Satan, of course, but that the air means the airwaves, the ethereal space around it, the messages going from point A to point B by radio, and in those days, television went through the air openly as well. And even still it does in digital form, it's just more beamed as opposed to broadcast over something. And he made that very, very clear. So when we go to the great God television and we get on our knees in front of our little carpet and bow towards it, and go, you know, television, Akbar, television, Akbar, to whatever goof is on the other side of the screen, telling us what to think, what to do, and how to do it. You know that they have the power. And if one of them told you to go to the top of a building and jump off and you'd be protected from COVID, I think there'd be a very high casualty rate the next day because people would do it. They believe it so much. And he said very specifically, the prince of the world is a very great electrical engineer. To educate means to produce immunity against a television, Marshall McLuhan. We live invested in an electric information environment that is quite as imperceptible to us as water is to a fish. And that's very true, because you don't really understand the effects of that media on your brain, just like the fish doesn't understand the water around it. And to a great degree, unless it's very windy, we forget that we're surrounded by air. We shape our tools, and then our tools shape us. And when we get into this robotic age, you will see a great, great, great reshaping, restructuring, reordering. And then his most classic message, the medium is the message. When you hear it, see it, smell it, whether it's in print or whether it's on the air, in radio, or a television video format, when this medium is presented to you in the formats it's given in, you take it in, your brain has been programmed. And I guess part of it is you need antiviral software in your head to protect you. And I got that as a child. My grandfather was adamant about one thing from, you know, almost as soon as I could stand up and understand the words he was saying. Never, ever let anyone do your thinking for you. That is your most sovereign responsibility and right, is to do your own thinking. And if you ever let someone else do your own thinking for you, well, I think we know the results. And then in this era that we're in, his other great quote was, World War III, which we are heavily involved in at this time, is a guerrilla information war with no division between military and civilian participation. You are an officer in this unseen regiment of knowledge, and so am I. Anyone who blogs, tweets, does the same. Those who do it because they're paid for by the Central Intelligence Agency or some big corporation that's in the military-industrial complex, well, they're obviously on the other side. But this is a war of words to control what the human mind thinks and what destiny it can proclaim based on that information, whether it's erroneous or true. And we have to do the very best to try to get out the truth, because if Jesus said anything, and that, you know, that's the other thing that's, you know, a major point of contention with me, you know, because Santa's great sayings don't really amount to much, do they? But if Jesus ever said anything, he said, the truth will set you free. And that's why they do so much to obscure it, and we have to do so much to reveal it. And by and large, the truth is painful. If I came to you with everything's rosy and nice and happy, and let's all get drunk and have a party and look at big bouncy girls from the Dallas Cowboys cheerleaders jump up and down, that's going to be happy. But is it going to lead us to any kind of freedom or salvation? Not even close. It's going to take us the other way because our brains are closed to the propaganda matrix. Generally, the truth has pain attended to it, and it hurts. And that's one of the reasons why you know you got the real thing. Just like if you're going to assay a metal to find out if it's gold or fool's gold, there's things you're looking for. And for the truth, that's one of them. It's generally a painful truth. Schopenhauer, the great philosopher, said, all truth passes through three stages. First, it is ridiculed. I'm sure a lot of us have heard that, COVID idiots. Second, it is violently opposed. Go in a store without a mask. Bop. And then it is accepted as being self-evident. And I hope we get to that stage. Because when we do, it would be the greatest faux pas in history, where we can look back on the people who presented all this crap to us and laugh in their faces. And for the politicians who tried to extract power and influence based on generating this fear and just basically riding a tsunami wave of fear for their own glorification or benefit, that they are run out of town on a rail, as they used to say in 19th century politics, tarred and feathered and left as a community laughingstock for taking us that way. But the crimes are so egregious because this is a genocide. This war was fought against the elderly in nursing homes. They were used as targets for the propaganda with serious, serious abuses that if you did this to your dog, the SPCA would be taking you away in handcuffs. But we did this to our generation of trailblazers before us who built our nations, raised us from children to give us a decent adulthood. We let them be carried away as either prisoners of war as they are today, locked up in seclusion to be used as test guinea pigs for the first rounds of a terribly toxic, dangerous substance, and just flat out murdered by neglect. Here in Canada, in our nursing homes in the Toronto area and in Quebec, the army went in to take them over because they were run, you know, you would probably do better in a Japanese prisoner of war camp. But when you see the fine details, it had nothing to do. 80% of the deaths were in the nursing homes of people that were quite old, who were close to going to die of something soon anyway. But what was the major factor was the neglect. These staff didn't change their gloves between patients. So imagine, you know, you're changing somebody's Pampers and then I'm feeding you your soup and I don't change the gloves. Now, do you think for a minute that that could have some kind of rationale with your sudden demise? The fact that I reuse needles from one patient to another patient, which is like beginner 101 stuff, but it happened.
We'll be right back after this break.
Radio at freedomslips.com. We'll be right back after this message.
Even the government admits that 9/11 was a conspiracy. But did you know that it was an inside job? That Osama had nothing to do with it? That the Twin Towers were blown apart by a sophisticated arrangement of mini or micro nukes? That Building 7 collapsed 7 hours later because of explosives planted in the building? Barry Jennings was there. He heard them go off and felt himself stepping over dead people. The U.S. Geological Survey conducted studies of dust gathered from 35 locations in Lower Manhattan and found elements that would not have been there had this not been a nuclear event. Ironically, that means the government's own evidence contradicts the government's official position. 9/11 was brought to us compliments of the CIA, the neocons in the Department of Defense, and the Mossad. Don't let yourself be played. Read America Nuked on 9/11. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
Did you ever feel that things were not quite right? That everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
We
We did not engage in conflict that was out of line with our mission.
Is it disloyalty? Is it sedition? Is it treason to oppose the hands of tyranny? Never!
I will never send troops anywhere on a mission of that kind without telling them that if somebody shoots at them, they can darn well shoot back.
I know not what course others may take, but as for me,
give me liberty! Oh, give me!
A dark cloud is finally lifting across the world as U.S. military intelligence and their global partners are destroying the deep state criminal power structure that has ruled over our planet for hundreds of years.
We are free with the God-given right, and we shall not yield that right to any power on earth.
Hi, I'm Scott McKay. The world is at, and I am your host on The Tipping Point. On Revolution Radio, where every Monday from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, we bring you the latest in this ensuing takedown of this global criminal empire.
That's an image of strength.
You'll get the raw, hard truth here on The Tipping Point. So come join us Mondays, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, in Studio B at revolution.radio.
Was it a conspiracy? Did you know that the police in Boston were broadcasting, "This is a drill, this is a drill," on bullhorns during the marathon? That the Boston Globe was tweeting that a demonstration bomb would be set off during the marathon for the benefit of bomb squad activities? And that one would be set off in 1 minute in front of the library, which happened as the Globe had announced. Peering through the smoke, you could see bodies with missing arms and legs. But there was no blood. The blood only showed up later and came out of a tube. They used amputee actors and a studio-quality smoke machine. Don't let yourself be played. Check out And Nobody Died in Boston Either. Available at moonrockbooks.com. That's moonrockbooks.com.
All right. Thanks for listening while we take that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Welcome back to this New Year's edition of The Raw Deal. I am Carl Herman, guest host for Professor Fetzer, with guest George Frund. With Conspiracy Cafe and War of the Multiverse, with what you've been saying, George, most of our listeners are aware that human beings are treated as livestock, sheeple, a slave race, that we're poisoned, manipulated, and that we're, when you get to a certain stage, you do come to the conclusion, as you state, that human beings are by and large helpless, that they believe what they're told, they are dictated to. My question is, what do you see for the presence of any white hats or any divine presence? White hats that may even be on par with the artificial intelligence that has taken over and hijacked the human race for their own purposes. Is there hope as you see it, George?
Well, I do believe in the divine, and I believe that's why I'm here, and I believe that's why many people I've made acquaintance with over the years, like Dr. Fetzer, are here. We're the white hats. And I've been telling people that when I do Power Hour Nation radio many, many times. Do you want to see, you know, who the white hats are? Look in the mirror, and they're looking back at you if you let them. You are the power. America wrote it down. We share a common heritage from Britain and many of the previous struggles from Magna Carta on. The English Civil War are still part of our DNA chain for a political sophistication. And you codified it very, very well, where a lot of the other British colonies just took it for granted. And like a lot of things you take for granted over time, they're forgotten or neglected. And it's nice to have it written down that it just hits you right in the face. And the big thing to hit you in the face is three words. We, the people. You are the government. I wrote a piece for UPI that for some strange reason they actually published a long time ago. And basically what I did is put constitutional law and contract law together. Constitutions are contracts to manage. And when you violate a contract, the contract becomes null and void. And the people you hire to manage are null and void. There's four levels of government. You're only taught three. And the most important three words in the English language are left out for some reason. And that was another quantum leap for me, is, well, why do they do that? You know, it doesn't matter where you go, you've got an executive, a court, and a legislature of some sort or another. And that's all. They always leave out we, the people. You're the fourth level of government, or actually you should be the first. And when they violate these contracts, the other offices are negated, and you have to remanage and redo. And this is what we're coming up to in the United States. The whole concept of white hats, I used to hear that a lot from a former girlfriend, that, you know, there's always something going to come and save us. That is a psychological operation to get you to stand down. Because if mom's coming home to do your laundry, you don't have to do it. You just pile it up at the door. And you don't care how big the pile's going to be, because mom's coming home to do it. Even if you can't open the door, you know she's coming home to do your laundry. When the time comes to drain the swamp, that is fundamentally the job of we the people. The founders were very, very clear when they gave you the Second Amendment. And a lot of people have absolutely no concept of what that really means in law. The law that's codified in the Second Amendment is the ultimate law of existence in our dimensional sphere, our Earth. It's the law of the jungle. The strong survive and the weak perish. So the people, being in great numbers with arms, were the ultimate force. So that at a time when everything breaks down and everything's controlled by what we might call the deep state, the ultimate power rests in the hands of we the people. And that's where the Great Reset comes by. The only thing the Second Amendment can't delegate to you is courage or understanding of what's going on. And without that, and probably another very important thing, is you will need great faith to stand firm and say, past this line you will not cross. Oliver Cromwell, one of the great revolutionaries in England, said it very, very well. And it's a shame some of his sayings aren't understood by Americans too, because that is the predecessor to what you have. This was a trail that did come from England, and there were many parts of many great people that led to what we have today. And Oliver Cromwell said, there is a company of men who will shed their last drop of blood before they see it settled so, speaking to usurpers in his day. And that is the bottom line of the courageous rebels that put King Charles's head in the basket in their day, and that they stood firm on honor and principle for a better world or a better society, free of a despot king. And you have a saying, give me liberty or give me death. And when this system is basically like putting your head in a vice, when you're tired of the squeezing, you prefer death. So taking the liberty back for yourself is a step backwards on the fear dynamic, because you've lost your fear of death. You prefer it. You want it. So you have nothing to lose by taking the freedom back, because the only thing they could do to you is kill you, and that would be a better option than living as a slave anymore. And that's the whole part and parcel of the slavery. I see that too in the money and the banking, is probably for a long time, since the bankruptcies they talk about in the 30s, that we were offered as chattel to the bondholders. And that's why we had to have these identification marks, birth certificates, which are discussed as bills of lading, for the present day slaves who think they're free. We were collateral. for these loans. But we don't understand that. And if the system did go belly up, they wouldn't tell us. But they might have to surrender the collateral to the banksters. And Catherine Austin Fitz gets into that as well in her interview and explains it very, very clearly as well. Not only are we cattle, we're chattel. And it appears that we are being turned over to something else. And that's why we all have to be itemized and controlled to this new standard. And the divine faith, the power of prayer, is very, very important. And that's why they've done such a great job of taking prayer out of the schools. When I was a boy, you know, quotes from the Bible were read for as part of learning to read. And one that I, you know, abjectly remember with fondness was the 23rd Psalm. Yea, though I go through the valley of the shadow of death, I will fear no evil, for the Lord is with me. So I'm not to have fear. And you don't instill that into children anymore. You don't instill a moral value like would come from the Lord's Prayer, to forgive trespasses, to try to understand at a deeper level about God, life, our existence, to have a good moral bearing and code. That's all left out. So we just become basically a morass of conflicting ideas and values that leads to conflict because there's no unity among us anymore. That was well thought out strategy because we've got a generation plus inculcated into this. So we become the dream of the tyrant, the cultural Marxist. There is nothing except the power. And who wields or controls that power as a deep state will be there. And we, the people, have to deal with something. They looked at Trump as being their salvation. He's going to go in. That's high noon on steroids, to send one man into Washington and say, you're going to do it all by yourself. And the invisible white hats will come out of nowhere, or the aliens, or whoever they're going to come along with to be some imaginary force to help you. You're on your own, and you're going to do it. When inside, everything is treachery, debauchery. Mr. Byrne, the billionaire, was at a meeting in the White House, and he said, you know, Trump is completely isolated and alone in there. And everybody's working contrary to his objectives and policies. So he's really up against it. And the only thing that can save or restore the system, because if there ever is another war, I would call it the War of the Restoration, to restore us back to the Republic that was before. And that would be we the people taking charge and saying, no, we're not going to let communist China dictate who our president is. That was a great episode in The Outer Limits as well, too. I found an old copy that you can watch and such like that. I think it was like The Thousand Days of, you know, something with a Chinese name on it. I did send it to James Fetzer. But that's what they did. They came in and made a replica to take over the presidency in an election. And he took over. And the world, as we know it, would be controlled by the communist Chinese, which is pretty much a reality we have today, is that Beijing Biden, from the Four Biden City, is going to run the world based on the fact that there was massive electoral cheating that most likely originated from China. Is it not so bad that he has the treasury keys? Because by and large, as a realist, I'd have to say the only reason people go into politics is to loot the treasury. That's their primary focus. They can tell you whatever lies they want, but they're only there for one reason. It's money. And, well, it's happened all the time, but it's an American stealing from Americans. Well, this time, there's more at stake than just the treasury. There's the control of the American military and the nuclear inventory. That could go to a Manchurian president. That is so important. That is worth fighting for. Because whoever gets control of that means they have complete and total control of the world to do whatever they want to do with. And the art of war is what I see being practiced very, very well. Well, they wrote it, but, you know, it's being practiced very, very well. As soon as this happened, As soon as they announce this disease and the lockdown, you know, if you know 1984, Brave New World, the Bible, The Art of War, and a few other books, you know, you see clearly what's happened. We've been captured and controlled. We're all prisoners. And so basically we need to have a giant prison revolt. And part of that will be, hopefully, that enough Americans take to the street, just like they did in the Vietnam time, where your shouting in the street drowns out any noise in Washington until it's done. And we get the power back to the people, whether you have another election or not. Some people I've heard, you know, they talk about, well, if this happens, they'll say it's a coup. Well, Beijing Biden wasn't sworn in yet, so it can't be a coup. You just have the last president who was the last president, and he can't coup himself. But it's like I was discussing with Jim, I'm fearful that President Trump is more like the riverboat gambler dandy you'd have in the 19th century. A lot of panache and flash, but what we need now is a George Washington or a Ulysses S. Grant or a George Patton, a president who would stand in the street with a sword in one hand and a Bible in the other and get to the third word of his oath, defend the Constitution, the American way of life, and all our values. It's not an easy task. But understanding the battle knows you understand the enemy too. And Satan, the prince of the air, he's public enemy number one. And some broadcasters say, oh, well, the media will just whip up a storm so the Chinese bring in UN troops and take us over. Well, there were American generals in the past who talk about things like that too. And one of my favorites was the general at the Battle of the Bulge, General McAuliffe, surrounded by the Germans, ordered to surrender, completely outnumbered, with little hope of surviving too long, but he only had one answer to them. Nuts. The Germans had to look that up in the dictionary because it wasn't exactly a response they were understanding. But you hold firm. And then his good luck is George Patton was smart enough to come back and clean house.
But, well, George, let me ask. So you're saying that the only white hats available are the patriots responding to this message. Do you find any credibility that white hat military leaders recruited Trump and have been using him as the front man for military operations going on behind the scenes? Do you see that as a plausible explanation?
No. I look at it more as a psychological operation to get the American people to stand down. Anything that stops you from doing the cleaning house is a psychological operation to make you stay home. You saw that in the Virginia gun protest. Oh, don't go. It's a trap. Don't do this. Don't do that. Don't do this. It's over. And I use an analogy for 1776. At a certain time, a certain man was a popular guy. So we say Benedict Arnold goes to Paul Revere and he says, don't do it. Don't make your ride. I'm a white hat. It's a trap. We marked all the muskets so we can find out who the traitors are. Let the British have them. So Paul Revere doesn't ride. Concord's kind of reverse. The British get all the muskets. You lose the war quickly. The white hat retires in the British Army quite comfortably somewhere on a pension. Who, whatever malcontents existed in the American Revolutionary Movement, were hung. It's over. The king smiles, goes back to his business. We have to be very careful about the words that tell us to give away our power in numbers and always depend that someone else is going to do it for us. Because by and large, I find when stuff piles up in my yard, I got to roll up my sleeves and get out the shovel. No one else is going to do it. And if it happens, it's a very rare thing. We will know very shortly, but I get the feeling that he's going to leave Dodge and you're not going to see him do anything officially, that he's thrown in the towel to them. And he's already openly talking about that. Mr. Byrne talks about that, how, you know, he's just ready to go spend the rest of his life playing golf and enjoying himself. And Biden's going to get the keys to the store. And there isn't going to be a military solution. if there was going to be a military solution, if I was President Trump, I would have done this last year. And yes, the media is going to be all over you to make you look like the dirty dog from hell. But I would have taken firm, swift action. When they cut me off television and took away my First Amendment rights, I'm the President of the United States, and you took away my First Amendment rights. If that isn't a violation of a federal law, it should be. But regardless, I would have had law enforcement authorities with warrants kicking in the doors in all these TV studios, closing them down, and turning them back on so I could continue what I have to say. And those other people would be in Guantanamo talking about life for a while. That would show clear, determined leadership and a man who means business that you don't screw with. We didn't see that. I would have made a new military force. Of most likely it would be occupied by my supporters, but that they would be an official branch of the military. So that way they can form in public without breaking any laws anywhere and have possession of their arms. And that if you do what has been done and steal the election from the American people, there's a code word. And when that code word is issued, outside of the normal chain of command, all these independent thousands or tens of thousands of units, as they may form up, are permitted to take independent action to do what has to be done. And that would be take over media, arrest the deep state or traitors, and generally in a conflict that's done by military tribunal and execution with a very simple trial, and just get it over with once and for all. I said that on Power Hour last year because I knew something was coming. I also said for constitutional sheriffs to form posse of anybody and everybody you can start to organize and train and get ready, because something's going to come along, a storm big enough that could affect the whole existence of the United States. But just like on Pearl Harbor, there's a motto in American history. At dawn, we sleep. We're not going to get out of our soft, comfortable beds to deal with anything. We let it roll over us, then we get mad, we turn around, and we go back. And usually in the past, that was good enough. But this time, it's not going to be good enough. Because an enemy will be in charge of the country, and a technology will be in control of us, and we are relegated, whether we like it or not. I learned this in the gun control argument. We are, by military doctrines, enemy combatants. That's how we're looked at by the power structure, especially here in Canada with, you know, the rabid gun control we have, and a lot of the states, too, that have it as well, is, you know, because a gun owner just can't understand. I'm a law-abiding gun owner. But you don't understand what crime you committed. You don't understand. You're the most dangerous thing on the planet at this time, with the motives being operated now. You are the ultimate criminal. You are Orwell's thought criminal. Do you see how dangerous you are? And do you know in the past, in various communist revolutions, what happens to thought criminals? You're rounded up and you're all put to death. It's a great movie about the Cheka, the Russian secret police. It's nothing but murder. Gross, vile, but it's well worth watching even the trailer for it, just so that you get the idea of the systematic arrest, internment, and slaughter of people. You have a trial. There's three men in an office. Somebody says a name, guilty. Another name, guilty. Another name, guilty. And then you're all stripped naked, put up against a wall in the bottom of some secret police building, blown away, and they take you out like a giant abattoir. And that's a true story. That is reality. And anywhere along the line, if you try to inform these people about what's happening, how it's happening, or to do something, well, I guess they were waiting for some white hats too, and they just never showed up. But ultimately, it's your responsibility. The founders gave you that. If you abrogate your responsibility, then you have consequences. And those consequences will be, you will be the enemy combatant, and you will have to live as they detail. As a thought criminal, you know stuff about human rights. My father used to subscribe to Guns and Ammo when I was a child, and I learned a lot about constitutional law in there. I was fascinated by the articles on the American system and constitutional law.
George, we only have a couple of moments left, and I would like to go ahead and wrap this up and put this into context. I do appreciate the starkness of the choice, and I do agree that it is up to us, and if white hats exist, we're going to have to put on the white hats and step up. The next week is certainly going to be telling with the meeting of both chambers of Congress in Washington, D.C., to see what will happen there. There are likely going to be a million patriots surrounding the congressional building as they are choosing what to do and knowing that they're going to have to walk out those doors. If you and I are white hats, they may be more densely collected within the U.S. military with decades to have planned. If you just take into consideration the time that has passed since the assassination of President Kennedy in 1963, there would have been the white hats fully aware of exactly what happened. So we will discover all together what happens. And I personally hope that the white hats are poised to go ahead and strike and make us all proud. But if you're right, then it'll be up to us to take a look at the ground and respond. Well, George, in the 1 minute that we have left, is there anything that you would like to say to conclude?
Well, I'm glad you mentioned John Kennedy because I learned something about John Kennedy. In a private tete-a-tete with the senior sergeant of the American Army on one of his tours before he was assassinated, he told him privately, "It is your job as the senior NCO to have the plan when this day comes, not the generals, because they'll probably be on the other side." He knew that. And hopefully the senior sergeants in the American military still know that. So if they're ever given orders to fire on the American people, they only have to give one order, about face, and it's over.
That sums it up well. Well, I thank all of our listeners, and especially for the actions that you will take in the coming days and weeks. I do appreciate our guest, George Frum, and his website, The War or Conspiracy Cafe, and his article, The War of the Multiverse.
Revolution.